Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us today on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Andy Dane, in for Rob Hart. Home sales are slumping as prices hit record highs. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, President Trump announcing a U.S.-Japan trade deal that will reduce tariffs, sparking optimism for some other agreements. Joining us now to discuss on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gus Fauché, Chief Economist at PNC Financial Services. Gus, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. Okay, so a lot of optimism here as we're hearing details from this trade deal with Japan. What should people know?
Well, certainly the tariffs are lower than what the administration was talking about a couple of months ago, but they're still much higher than they were at the beginning of 2025. So even with this deal, Americans will be paying more for cars imported from Japan, for appliances, parts, things like that. So we're still going to see higher prices, just maybe not as high a prices as we might have seen a month or two ago.
And Gus, you know, Japan making a big investment here in the U.S. You mentioned kind of the automotive area there. What sectors could we maybe see benefit most from this deal?
Yeah, no, I think we will see more auto investment in the United States, although I think a lot of that was already planned. You know, we might expect to see some high-tech production moving to the United States. But I think overall, although, you know, there are communities that will benefit that, I think the higher tariffs that we're seeing, whether it's from Japan, whether it's from Europe now compared to where we were at the beginning of the year, they're going to be a drag on overall economic growth.
So, Gus, obviously trade has been a big talk under President Trump. Curious, in your eyes, kind of what this deal maybe signals about trade strategy in this second term, especially when you talk about, you know, China and other partners here that the U.S. could be talking to.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the administration has announced a few deals over the past couple of weeks. There are still some big deals out there that need to be signed. You know, the European Union, I expect to see tough negotiations there. But I think, again, the overall result is that, yes, tariffs aren't as high as what the president initially proposed on Liberation Day, but they're still a lot higher than they were at the beginning of the year. And that means higher inflation in the near term. And we're going to be paying more for a lot of the goods that we purchase.
Gus, what about supply chain and maybe even job creation in the U.S. for those who are maybe kind of unpacking this deal and wondering what it could mean for those areas? What do you predict?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have not seen major supply chain disruptions from these tariffs. I think that, you know, what we've seen is that importers imported a lot in early 2025 to get ahead of these tariffs. There are still substantial inventories that are out there, and so we haven't seen supply chain difficulties. We may see stronger job growth in some manufacturing industries, but with higher inflation, I think overall the net result is likely to be weaker job growth when we look at the impact across the U.S. economy.
And Gus, before we let you go, also want to touch on, you know, the fact here that Japan is really the top foreign holder when it comes to U.S. debt. Curious how that may have affected its leverage in these trade talks, and how may that evolve now that this deal is done?
Yeah, I wouldn't expect to see big changes in Japanese holdings of U.S. investments. What we have seen is that generally, I think foreign investors are a little less willing to invest in U.S. treasuries right now because they think the U.S. is withdrawing from the global trading system to some extent. So that has pushed up long-term interest rates in the United States. And for example, it's, you know, pushing up mortgage rates, which is weighing on the housing market in mid-2025.
Lots to unpack from this deal, that's for sure. Thanks so much, as always. That is Gus Fauché, Chief Economist at PNC Financial Services. Coming up, an update on the struggling housing market.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Home sales fell last month as affordability continues to challenge many buyers across the market. Joining us now to discuss is Drew Wishover, founder and owner of Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Drew, good to be with you. Thanks for having us, for being here on the Noon Business Hour, that is. In your eyes, what is behind this drop that we saw last month in home sales?
Yep, thanks again, Andy. High mortgage rates, I think, are still driving this. The average rate right now on the 30-year mortgage is between 6.8 and 7%. And I think that people are still feeling this economic uncertainty. There's been a lot of cancellations in the contracts that were kind of, done a couple months ago. So that's, really making people reconsider why they're doing this. They're just uncertain what's going on. And there's still a supply chain issue. I mean, there's just not a lot of inventory out there.
So, Drew, we talk a lot about it. We've seen a lot of the national numbers. What are you seeing locally? Are we bucking the trend? Are we really kind of falling in line with some of those issues? What are you seeing in the Chicago area?
Well, the Chicago area, the home prices have gone up. So, there's definitely been a growth in what the housing prices have been. But the inventory levels have increased as well. So I guess that's a positive thing comparing it to last year. In the property in the Chicagoland area proper, it's been selling, faster. And I guess that's good, too, because it seems like, more people are finding some desirable homes in the area. But, the affordability issues are still a problem with the first time home buyers. That there's just, even though the inventory is rising, the affordability of those homes is just not there. So, crazy, the luxury housing market is up in the Chicagoland area. Houses between $2 million and $4 million, they're record sales right now.
So, when we look at these record high home prices, and obviously, there's a lot of factors that go into that, Drew, but what is driving that spike, and how is that impacting affordability? You mentioned the difficulty, especially for first-time buyers here. What is maybe behind this rise in these prices?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, too, because, there's been so many years of underbuilding. The home construction, it's been a real difficult time for the construction folks that, there's been such a demand for years, and there's just, the undersupplying of these homes, especially in the entry-level area, like in that first-time affordability place. And then, the pandemic era, that's been, those low interest rates and remote work, that made people stay home, that got people used to a totally different lifestyle. And then, the high prices, high mortgages, I mean, it's just that's certainly continuing to, cause these home prices to go up. And it's just impacting the affordabilities all the way around.
Drew, I want to go back to you mentioned kind of the rise in demand for luxury, especially here in the Chicago area. And obviously, we talk about, affordability being a challenge. It's kind of an interesting area to be popular. What are you seeing kind of in that area, especially locally?
Well, I mean, the competition is different up there, right? So, those are typically not the homes that people are, looking for typical financing or having a difficulty getting financing for. So, it's just a different market of buyer. It's a different clientele that is, attracted to those homes that are in the $2 million to $4 million range. And, so competition is, the people that are in that area, their competition is probably a little bit less, but I'm sure it's just as fierce with, the bidding and things. It's just they're bidding with bigger dollars. So these properties are sitting on the marketplaces for, 2 months or less. That's been the national numbers that we've seen. It's really interesting to follow that.
Yeah, all I could say is it must be nice to be in that sector. Great stuff as always. Thanks so much. That's Drew Wishover, founder and owner of Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Up next, McDonald's appearing to have a winner with its latest menu return.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
McDonald's snack wraps are back and booming. The long-awaited return boosted traffic, driving sales, and winning over loyal customers with some strong early demand. We welcome in now RJ Hotovy, head of analytical research at Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. All right, so aside from the countless letters that I personally wrote to McDonald's demanding that the snack wrap return, why did the chain bring them back after nearly a decade away?
Yeah, I think that you're exactly right. It was a product that, I think you and I and several others wanted to back in the rotation. And I think at this point, there's a couple of reasons for it. One, we've talked about nostalgia being a powerful driver of visitation trends in the quick service restaurant space on the noon business hour several times before. And I think that certainly plays into this factor. I think the company was better prepared. They recently introduced the McCrispy strips, which becomes the base of this product. So they already had at least some of the product in there. I think the last time around, there was too much menu complexity with the snack wrap, too many flavor profiles, too many things that were outside the normal operating scope of the restaurant. So it made it easier to return here as well. So there were several factors, and as you pointed out, our visitation data suggests that they had an exceptionally strong and consumer response when they launched it it was last week.
So, I'm curious, RJ, as well. I've seen a few people that I know who were super excited about this, went, tried it, and said, it wasn't quite the same. It was still good. It's still, the nostalgia is there, but it maybe doesn't taste the same. You mentioned the chicken base there. So I'm curious about kind of repeat interest, or if maybe early data is showing that you've got people swinging by, trying it again just to say they tried it, and then that's, calling it a done deal.
That is a big question here. And like any new product or relaunch of a product, that is ultimately the big question, whether or not it can drive repeat visits. And I think we're a little too early to make that call right now. I think looking at the data, they've seen a lot of consumer awareness. A lot of people want to come back out and try it. That's the nostalgia driving it. But can it drive repeat visits over an extended period of time? And that's still to be determined. Obviously, they've changed a few things. They're using different sauces than they did before. And so I think that's part of this experimentation phase that people are going through and figuring out whether they like it or not. And so I think that's going to be ultimately the goal. Can this drive repeat visits? And I think that we'll have to wait a few more weeks before we can really determine that.
RJ, quickly before we let you go, the next question is always then, what happens next? I'm sure other chains are kind of keeping an eye on this and thinking about maybe reviving a favorite that they have also gotten rid of. Where do you see kind of this trend going next?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And I think, as long as it plays into a few things, one, even though, innovation drives, generally speaking, more repeat visits, consumers are still very focused on value right now. And so price sensitive consumers, so if you bring out a product, it's probably better to have something in the value side of the equation. We're also having the situation where, with harder labor availability in the market right now, too, you have to have a product that can fit into your operations. You can't add undue complexity into the model, too. So I think those are kind of the prerequisites for things like this. But certainly we've had no shortage of nostalgic products brought back. And I don't think this will be the last. I think we'll probably start to see more and more of these in the back half of the year and then in the years ahead.
Really exciting. Love any segment in which we can evoke the name Snack Wrap. So awesome stuff. Thanks so much. That is RJ Hottovy, head of analytical research at Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, how grandparents can help set their grandkids up financially.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. Stocks trading sharply higher. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial here in Chicago. Jeff, good afternoon. Thanks for being with us on the Noon Business Hour. All right, so a big talk financially today has been the U.S. and Japan trade deal. Again, we are seeing the stocks moving higher today. What's your takeaway from word of that deal?
Well, Andy, you're absolutely right. We're seeing optimism in the stock market due to another trade deal, a tangible trade deal with Japan. But if you think about the record heat in Chicago, there's record heat in the stock market. The S&P 500 had another intraday new all-time high record today after yesterday was the 11th closing record just for 2025. So I think you've seen just a parabolic move, a V-shaped recovery, if you will, Andy, after the liberation lows back in April. And today we have two of the Mag 7, two of the Magnificent 7, the tech darlings that we love. Tesla and Google are both reporting after the bell. So we'll see if there's going to be more follow through. But right now, it is as hot as downtown Chicago.
That is very, very toasty. We love to see a heat advisory on Wall Street here as well. You know, I'm curious, Jeff, if, you know, we talk about this trade deal with U.S. and Japan and the effect that that's had, as you mentioned, on the markets. Where do we stand here with optimism in terms of more trade deals that could come and maybe, you know, continue to crank up the heat on Wall Street?
Well, it's fascinating to me, Andy, and if you think about the sentiment surrounding trade tariffs, going back to April, I could argue that there was an overextension of selling because people were so fearful of potential inflation that was going to be caused in the wake of these trade tariffs. We haven't seen that inflation materialize, so now we're seeing optimism, we're seeing a lot of sentiment shift. Arguably, it's getting a little bit too optimistic, but nonetheless, these moves, they get over-exaggerated, they get overextended. So I think the market, if we see the continued strength of earnings, specifically in Magnificent 7 technology names, we will see the market potentially move another 5% higher before we come up for air.
All right. Well, not to throw cold water or I guess in this case, maybe air conditioning on what we're talking about here. But when we talk about threats to the markets here, Jeff, what kind of has you concerned as we head into the second half of 2025?
Well, I think we always are kind of walking on eggshells. You know, President Trump could tweet something, could say something. There could be a policy initiative that we're now looking for. No one saw the trade tariff curveball or black swan event back in April. But I think interest rates continue to be a pain point for the administration. There's continued threats of Chairman Powell being fired out of the Federal Reserve and lowering interest rates. So I think that's something to monitor. But right now, nothing, Andy. There's not been a single headwind. And there's been a ton of headwinds that have been thrown at the marketplace. Nothing's really slowed the market down. So I think as you see the U.S. economy continue to gain strength, look at industrials. XLI is the ETF we talk about. That's the number one S&P 500 sector year to date. No one would have guessed that going back to last quarter of 2024. So I think you look at some of the defensive industrial names that are doing well in conjunction with some of the technology names. So if we see interest rates go higher, that could be a potential headwind. But if they continue to kind of stay moderated, look at the 10-year note around 4.25%, 4.5%, that should be smooth sailing as we kind of continue in the summer.
Jeff, you know, before we let you go here, you know, we talk a lot about the uncertainty in the markets, and we talk a lot on the program about, you know, maybe those investors who are kind of anxiously sitting on the sidelines, not totally sure where to go and how to get involved. You wonder if those people maybe see the markets and the numbers today. They see this trade deal and they want to get involved. What is your advice to those who have maybe been kind of taking the cautious approach so far this year, but are now deciding they want to kind of dip their toes into the markets?
You know, you're right. We are seeing all-time highs of $7.5 trillion sitting on the sidelines in cash right now, Andy. And I think that is a situation where you're letting emotion overwhelm your plan, your financial security. So I think if you're sitting on the sidelines, I think you can be prudent and put some of the money in here, but you have to be careful. I wouldn't put all money in either on a low or a high. And think about trying to time a low and trying to time a high, Andy, is very difficult. And if you're trying to sell to get into cash and get back in, you have to be right twice. That's pretty difficult, Andy.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. He is Jeff Kilburg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial in Chicago. Up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, how grandparents can help out the grandkids financially without helping too much.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Personal Finance Wednesday. Grandparents can give their grandkids a financial head start without spoiling them. Joining us to discuss how to do that is Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of Engage Wealth Group, online at engagewealthgroup.com. Ed, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. All right, so grandparents have been known to maybe spoil the grandkids a little too much at times. But when we talk finances, what are some of the ways that grandparents can help out, but you know, not help out maybe too much?
Yeah, Andy, while we don't have grandchildren of our own, we live vicariously through our clients. And I can tell you the vast majority of them love having them around and love, quote unquote, spoiling them. So when it comes to supporting your grandchildren, especially financially, you have to think about ways to engage in them, whether that's like travel experiences or investing in them outright in terms of some different accounts. you want to kind of have a balance to this approach. Again, we don't want to overly spoil them, but we want to kind of give them the tools to help them guide themselves throughout their financial journey.
You know, and I'm curious too, you know, when we talk about kind of the financial discussions, you know, sometimes we all had different relationships with grandparents, and maybe sometimes you're a little more open to listening to them when it comes to maybe compared to listening to your parents. So should grandparents maybe get involved in some of those financial conversations as well with the young people?
It's a great point, Andy. So depending on the relationship, obviously, grandparents can be a great steward, a great coach, if you would, for young children. But obviously, this is a group event. You want to have the parents and the grandparents completely aligned when working with the grandchildren, especially when it comes to the finances. So again, setting themselves up and investing in them today for their financial future makes a lot of sense. And again, there's things like 529 accounts, there's custodial accounts, and other ways that you can invest in these grandchildren, not only, again, for today, but well into the future to set them on that good path.
You touched on it there, Ed, and I wanted to get more insight there. You mentioned the 529 plans. Obviously, there's custodial accounts, the Roth IRAs, and every situation is different. But if a grandparent is hearing this and wants to take part in this and wants to help their grandchildren kind of get a head start, is there one of those areas that you maybe say would be the best plan moving forward?
Yeah, so we'll start with 529s really quick, Andy. So 529s to us are one of the greatest things that's provided to help fund for future expenses, education expenses, typically for college. So if you're an Illinois resident, you can have a Bright Start account for your grandchild. And not only do you help fund your grandchildren's future education, but you can also receive a tax deduction for the person who's putting the money in. So you can talk about funding of education and providing them, again, that foundational piece. And the other one you touched upon is that Roth IRA. Another great idea that if your child has earned income or your grandchild has earned income and they're under the age of 18, you can start what's known as a custodial Roth account where the grandparent can be the custodian for the child under 18. And again, when they have earned income from side jobs or things like that, you can help them contribute to that Roth IRA. And another great way to save for that future, because don't forget, Roth IRAs, while you don't get a tax deduction up front, money's in a Roth, grow tax deferred, and potentially on the back end, tax free. So again, you use that power of compounding, and then you can sit down with your grandchild and talk about how to investing. Again, planting these seeds for that future success. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. Just be very thoughtful in terms of what would be most appropriate for your grandchild.
And Ed, quickly, before we let you go, you know, aside from earning some major points, you know, with your grandchildren in terms of you know, having the cool grandparents and bragging to your classmates and your friends that, you know, grandma and grandpa are investing in you and helping you kind of get on the right track. What are some of the benefits long term when you talk about this financial gifting?
Yeah, so you're being involved in your grandchild's life. And again, the vast majority of our clients love to be involved in their grandchildren. It's one of the highlights that we talk about during our meetings. So by being strategic with your financial gifts, and again, coordinating that with the parents and then ultimately with the grandchildren, you plant those seeds of financial knowledge and gain an appreciation of personal finance, which can grow in terms of a lifelong understanding of saving and investing. What a great way to get connected with your grandchildren and stay connected throughout that journey. So it's not only helpful for the grandchild, but could be potentially for generations to come. So absolutely, if you've got questions, seek out a certified financial planner to get more ideas in terms of ways of financially supporting your grandchildren in a way that's meaningful and impactful.
And that is certified financial planner Ed Jurtzen. Thanks so much. Ed is founder of Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Find them online at engagewealthgroup.com. And join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. Still to come, autos and what they mean for trade.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
President Trump's trade deal with Japan includes a 15% tariff on cars, not the 25% levy originally threatened. Joining us now to discuss the potential impact of the deal is John McElroy, automotive industry analyst, host of Autoline.tv. John, thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour. All right, so we lower those tariffs on the car imports from Japan to 15%. What will that mean for U.S. auto prices and competition as well?
Well, look, prices are still going to go up. Remember that the tariff prior to Trump coming in was 2.5%. So the new tariff, even though it's lower than the 25% he had been threatening, is still six times higher than it was before. And so you're going to see automakers, Japanese automakers in this case, eat a little bit of the cost. Maybe their dealers will eat a little bit of the cost, but you're going to see higher prices on cars too.
So, John, you know, could this trade deal maybe ease some of the industry instability? You know, obviously the recent tariff threats have thrown a lot of that in the mix, supply chain disruptions as well. What does this trade deal mean for those areas?
Well, it helps. There's no question. Look, now at least the Japanese automakers and their suppliers and, you know, the operations here in the U.S. for those companies and their dealers have at least some sort of certainty. Now they know what the tariff is going to be. Before, there was a lot of uncertainty, and the 25% tariff was, going to really hurt them. The Europeans are also rather relieved at seeing this. They think they're probably going to end up in the same area. So even though these tariffs will continue to be disruptive, at least these automakers overseas are starting to see some certainty as to what's going to happen.
And finally, John, to piggyback off that a little bit, you know, this agreement, as far as what it means for future trade talks with other countries that are key auto producers, how do you see that playing out?
Well, look, I mean, the Trump administration has made it very clear that, you know, overall, it varied a little bit. But overall, the U.S. Tariff on most imports was about 2.5%. And Trump seems bent on getting it up to the 10% or 15% area. Some countries may pay higher than that. The Trump administration really thinks that tariffs are the way to go here, Andy.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. As always, that is John McElroy, automotive industry analyst, host of AutoLine.tv. A reminder, if you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and skip back to the time you'd like. There is a pause and rewind function online and with the Odyssey app.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.